Columbia Workshop presents Nine Prisoners by William March, adapted for radio by Brian J. Byrne.
My name's Julius Pelton. I don't mean a thing to you. I don't mean a thing to anybody else. And it means less to me. There was a time when I was proud of that name. Proud of a lot of things. My background. My character. My country. My country. I guess that was my greatest pride. But all that's changed. Now I'm proud of nothing. I'm interested in nothing because, you see, I'm a body. It probably sounds screwy to you, but that's what I am. A body. A thing without a soul. It wasn't always that way. I had a soul in those days when I had something to be proud of. It was my pride that lost me my soul. My pride of my country. That's why I enlisted and did my bit in the war. The war. I came out of it all in one piece. I was a lucky guy, that's what they said. But I lost more than an arm, a leg, a head, all my life. It don't make much difference where it happened. It was a long way from here on the edge of a wood. To our left was a gravel pit, long abandoned, with one narrow opening. Back of that, a ravine ran straight for 100 yards. Then it stopped blindly against a bank of clay. That's where I stopped, too. Where I stopped being the man I was. Where I lost all that makes the flesh more than so many pounds of beef. I just ordered my men to dig in. Our first battalion was to pass over our heads to continue the attack. In the gravel pit were 22 prisoners taken that day. We just about finished eating when the first men started to jump over.
All right, fellas, that's deep enough.
Here comes the first battalion, Sarge.
We'll get your heads down or those guys will kick your brains out.
Watch it!
Down, everybody!
Boy, they seem to be all legs and arms jumping over our heads like that.
Yeah, they're nimble, sure enough. But most of those legs and arms will be slung all over the countryside in a few minutes.
How many of them guys you figure will come through?
In a fight like this, there's only one out of every three.
Jeez, one in three. Two down for everyone up.
Look at them go, like they're in a hurry to get it over.
Funny when you think of it, isn't it?
Two out of three. One over. Two over. Repeat. Here comes the lucky step, the third. One, two, lucky three.
Gee, it's like there was a big grave on the other side of this trench and every two guys was jumping into it.
Yeah. One, two, lucky three.
Well, where they made it digging here?
Don't know, but thank your stars you're not going on with the 1st Battalion.
We done our share.
That's what you think. Don't worry, they'll fix up some sort of a mess for us.
The detail of goddamn prisoners we got over there in the tent there.
Here comes the last of the battalion.
That's good. My neck's getting stiff and being cramped down in this shallow trench.
All right, men, you can relax now. Hey, Sarge, when do we eat?
That belly of yours sure gives you a lot of trouble in evidence.
Well, I'm hungry.
Sergeant Pelton.
Yes, Captain Matlock.
You kind of knows it yet? How many men have you lost?
Four, sir.
That's not bad. Could be worse.
Yes, sir.
You've nearly 2 dozen prisoners in the sandpit, haven't you?
Exactly 22, sir.
That's bad. You're taking too many prisoners, Sergeant. They're a problem.
Yes, sir, they sure are.
What do you think we're going to do with them?
I was wondering, sir. Some of them are pretty badly wounded.
I wasn't thinking about that much. Help you or otherwise, they present a problem. Can't take them along with us, and we can't let them roam behind our lines.
No, sir.
Something has to be done.
Couldn't we send them back with a guard, sir? The wounded ones especially.
No, that's impossible. We'll be moving up pretty soon. We'll need all of our men.
Brophy and Carter will have to go back anyway, so they're pretty badly banged up. They could take
No, Sergeant. It's a very simple solution to the whole thing.
Yes, sir?
The easiest thing would be to shoot them.
Shoot them, sir?
Yes. You could train a machine gun on the gravel pit. That's the simplest way.
That'd be simple enough, sir, and it would get them off your hands.
Yes, it would. I'm afraid the gap is too narrow and the sides are dug in. Pretty hard for our gunners. Well, that won't do. Can't do it in a sandpit. You better take them up the ravine. Do the job there.
But, Captain, you don't mean that, do you, sir?
Don't mean it? What do you think I'm talking for?
But they're prisoners. Unarmed. Helpless.
Well, what would you do with them? We're going to advance in a few hours.
Why, I... Well, I don't know right now, sir.
Then mine is the only solution. Take the men up the ravine and...
Good God, sir, that's murder. Cold-blooded murder.
It's war, Sergeant. Seems to matter a little way which way men die. Fact is that they must die in war.
But not like that, sir. Why, I couldn't...
Yes, sir.
How long have you been in the service?
20 years, sir.
Long enough to know that you should obey orders without questioning.
Yes, sir.
Better to take Corporal Foster and his squad. Use automatic rifles. I think Foster's the right man to do it.
Yes, sir. Foster's just the man for a job like that.
Then you better tell him right away. Have him finish the job before nightfall. Good luck to you. Do a clean job.
Yes, sir.
Glad, Sergeant. You look blue around the gills. Captain, give you some bad news?
Yeah. Yeah. Lord help me. I've been in the Army since I was a kid. I've seen plenty to turn a man's stomach. But this is raw. This is the rawest thing I ever heard.
My name is Clarence Foster. I was Corporal Foster then. There's a big difference between Clarence Foster and Corporal Foster. In fact, I'm hardly able to hook one up with the other now. You see, I cut my teeth almost on war propaganda. I was told how glorious war was. They've played a dirty trick on guys like me. They led me to believe all the stuff they wrote. Now, they say just the opposite. The propaganda is for peace. So war is a terrible thing. The things that were so right then are so wrong now. It makes a guy feel that nothing at all is right. It ain't a pleasant thing to be turned from a hero to a beast just by the things that guys write down on paper. It's taken me all these years to understand just how Sergeant Pelton felt when he came to relay the captain's orders. I couldn't understand then. He was pale and trembling, acting like a human being and him a soldier. I didn't get the guy at all. He called me aside out of earshot of my squad. He looked so scared I wanted to laugh.
Good God, Foster, don't stand there like I'd only told you it was time for grub. Don't you realize what I said?
Sure, Sarge. You just told me the captain wants me to kill 22 unarmed prisoners.
And it means no more to you than any order? Like Taylor order?
Certainly not. That enemy, ain't they? The guys we're fighting.
We're not fighting them in that sand pit. They're helpless. They can't do no harm anymore.
That's what you say, Sarge. But it ain't so. Don't you realize what they're up to? The enemy send a lot of men over to get themselves up. Then when they get enough men back of our line, they start a drive and the prisoners attack us from the rear. It's an old trick, Sarge. I'm surprised you ain't heard about it before.
I've heard a lot of hooey in my time.
But this is great goods, I tell you. I read all about their dirty tricks even before I came over.
Do you believe all the tripe you read?
You don't think they'd go to all the trouble of printing it if it wasn't true? Oh, say, Sarge, you're getting chicken-hearted. You better realize that in a war, anything you do to the enemy is all right.
You believe that, too?
Why, sure I believe it. Don't they burn down churches and dash the brains out of innocent babies? Oh, gee, now look, don't you go getting yourself in an uproar about this. Just leave everything to me.
I sure will. The captain said you're just the man for the job.
Sure, he's got confidence in me. Why, Sarge, war's war. It ain't no tea party. Those fellas in the sand pit are dirty. You gotta treat them dirty.
We're doing that all right. This is the dirtiest thing I ever heard of. And I hope something will happen to stop it.
That's the way you feel about it? I guess you can't help it.
Well, the captain wants it done before dark. You better get your men ready.
Okay, Sarge, we'll be ready all right. Hey, you guys. Load your automatic rifles and make it snappy.
That's right, Hawk.
We got a little job to do.
What do you mean, a little job?
We're taking the prisoners out of the sand pit.
Where to?
Up the ravine.
Yeah? What's the idea?
We're going to shoot them.
What? Shoot them? What for? What have they done?
There ain't nothing else we can do with them. We got to get rid of them.
Now, what kind of a gag is this, Foster? What are you giving it?
I'm giving you the captain's orders, and I don't want no arguments out of you guys.
The captain must have gone off his nuts.
He expects to go through with this. He's sure crazy.
No, he ain't. He knows what he's doing. People who don't understand that this is necessary may think the captain's wrong, but I understand. I think he's doing the right thing.
Well, I ain't gonna do it.
What?
I don't mind killing a man in a fight, but I ain't gonna shoot him down in cold blood.
You'll do it, you're told.
Nobody's making a murderer out of me.
If you don't obey the captain's orders, you'll get court-martialed, and maybe we'll have to shoot you, too.
But the captain don't dare do a thing like this. He don't dare, I tell you.
He can't make us do it.
Why don't you do it yourself, Foster? You scored with one machine gun.
That's enough, Jeff. Get your guns and start moving.
Now, I ain't gonna fool you guys anymore. Quiet. You go or you'll get court-martialed. Tight belt. Now, who wants to be the first to disobey orders? I'm waiting. Who's the first? Okay, then. Let's get going.
My name is Claus, Everett Claus. They told me, like they told the others, that we were fighting a humanitarian war, a war to save the world, a war to end wars. But I know better now. There's no such thing as a humanitarian war. I know, too, that wars never end. Not for some, anyway. They go on and on. You can forget the war as a whole, sure. There's always some incident that sticks in your mind. You live and relive that incident over and over again until you know that there is no end. I was a private in Corporal Foster's squad. I was detailed to guard the prisoners in the sand pit. They were mostly young boys with fine fuzz on their weary faces. They looked sick and hungry. There was one among them, a little man, the clearest blue eyes I'd ever seen. He's much older than the others, and he seemed to be the leader. His name was Schmidt. I found out that he was a cabinet maker like myself. And we became good friends. We talked a lot about what he was going to do and the war would be over. That time, we didn't know anything about Captain Matlock's order. In fact, we had forgotten all about the war for the time being. He told me some darn interesting things about cabinet making where he came from. We sat there in the side of the pit. Far off to our right, the heavy guns were coughing.
The minute I saw you, Quals, I knew you were a builder of things, like myself.
How did you know, Smith?
Your hands. They still have the same of your trade. You see? Mine have, too.
Yeah. Nothing can wear that off, I guess.
I never wanted to wear off. I'm proud of my trade. I'm proud of my hands. With these two hands, I once made a music cabinet for a prince.
Your hands are not like a tradesman's at all. They're long and thin like a musician's or an artist.
Well, that's what we are called. Cabinet makers, they are artists.
I guess you're right there. Darn few people can ever make a box, much less a cabinet.
I learned my trade from my father. He learned it from his father.
It's funny how a trade can bring people together. I don't feel it. You're like a foreigner at all.
That's just it, Klaus. If we could only stop and realize that the man we fight is a man just like ourselves, then there would be no war.
You're all right, Schmidt. Have a cigarette?
What? You want to give me one of your cigarettes?
Sure, go ahead, take it.
Oh, it's so long since I have a smoke. I bet it'd make me sick.
Yeah. I don't.
Ah, that's so good. Oh, Klaus, please. You wouldn't mind if I pass the cigarette among my men to see how they look at it.
No, go right ahead.
Here, Jungens. Jeder nimmt nur einen Zug. Und dann geht's zum nächsten. Thank you. I thank you for all of my men. They cannot speak in your language.
That's all right, boys. They sure go at that cigarette like they'd eat it.
Most of them have not had a smoke in months.
Schmidt.
Yes, Victor. What is now?
I can't stand it much longer. The pain is too much.
Oh, it won't be long now, Victor. Soon they will take us out of here and you will go to a hospital.
You think so, Schmidt?
Yes, my friend.
Soon.
Now, you save your energy. Here, you have a smoke, too.
What's the matter with that youngster, Schmidt?
Oh, he was shot in the stomach. Only his youth keeps him alive.
How old is he?
16 years.
Child.
Comes from the same town as I. He thinks that I can help him. I wish I could.
He should be in a hospital. He looks so pale. He's not much more bloodless. You should make up their mind what they're going to do with you, man.
I'm afraid poor Victor will not be able to wait much longer.
Things must be pretty bad in your country when they send babies like that out to fight.
It means that the war will be over soon. There's no more men, and I will be glad to get back home. Well, we used to have such good times before the war.
after the day's work was done, we got together and we drink beer and we drink songs. And I wonder if we'll ever sing again.
Oh, sure. Soon it's over, you'll forget all about it. Hey, what's up? What are they talking about?
Why, they're excited because they see a squad of your men coming through the woods. You see over there?
Oh, yeah, it's Sparta Squad. He's my corporal.
You think that they're going to take us back to hand lines now?
I reckon so. It's about time.
God. There, Victor. You see, they're coming to take you to the hospital.
Good. Don't fix me.
Dash, I sure envy you fellas. The war's over for you. No more fighting. No more sleeping in muddy trenches. No more smelling dead flesh.
Drury's my name. I just got out of military prison. I served 20 years. I thought I'd be able to start life all over again. I'm only 42 now. But there ain't no starting life again. I thought I'd forget in those 20 years, but I didn't. It was 20 years of thinking. Thinking of what had happened before I was court-martialed. You see, I'm a little queer now. Stir-dippy, they call it. Nobody wants to have anything to do with me. Yeah, you say I'm a little queer. So is life. I remember when he put a soldier's uniform on me. I thought I looked swell. I did, too. It's a great thing, that uniform. Fitted me like a glove. I was so anxious to prove myself worthy of it. They don't think I did. That's why they threw me in prison. But I know I proved myself worthy of myself. When Corporal Foster marched us into the gravel pit, I was thinking of the same things every other one of the men was. But I put my thoughts in action. We was lined up in front of those 22 frightened prisoners. There was nine of us. The nine was just as scared as the 22.
Rawls, you're dumb. How many more times do I have to explain this to you?
Well, I can't believe it, Arthur. Such a thing has never been done. Well, I've been telling these men that they were going back behind to have their wounds taken care of.
Well, you didn't lie to them. Their wounds will be taken care of, all right. Hey, Drury, what's the matter with you?
Pick up your gun, Walt. Ain't no use getting yourself in trouble.
What's the idea of throwing your rifle away?
I didn't get into this war to do things like this.
Yeah, well, if you thought it was going to be a child's game, you should have brought your dolls and dishes along with you. Now pick up that gun.
I ain't never going to touch that gun again. I got nothing to do with it.
Oh, calm down, Walt. You're getting the prisoners excited. You got a dig for a court-martial, Drury?
I don't care. I don't care what they do with me. I'm getting out of here.
Don't be a snap, Walt.
You can do it if you want to, but I ain't even going to look at it. I'm getting out of here. I'm going to have no part of it. I'm getting out of here.
Hey, Walt! Walt, come back here! Let him go. He won't get far. The military police will pick him up, then he'll get his.
He sure is scared.
He's got more guts than a whole bunch of us. He's got nerve enough to do what we all like to do.
Well, get the belly aching and get those men out of the sand pit. We got to be at the ravine before dark.
Dark now, Foster.
Dark? You're nuts. The sun's still shining.
The sun's shining, all right. But it's the darkest day any of us have ever known. Gordon. I've been around the world a couple of times. I don't know what else to do with myself. But of all the traveling I've ever done, the longest trip of all was the track from the gravel pit to the ravine. The prisoners came out of the pit stolidly, looking neither to the right nor the left. The wood had been raked by artillery fire.
They glanced apprehensively over their shoulders at us and began to mutter excitedly.
Don't be afraid, men. Your house signals and come as you are told.
Come on, down in the ravine there.
I don't like this, Steve.
All right, Adam.
Here. Cut the gas. Get in there. You men, bottom along.
Please, Corporal. They're frightened. Please, be patient.
You can't wait here all night. You tell them in your own lingo to get into the ravine.
All right, Corporal.
What's he telling us, Jim?
He's telling them that we wear different uniforms and we speak a different language, but we're made of the same flesh and blood.
He's expressing his faith in men, and we're getting ready to kill them.
Now they go in.
All right. Thanks. Now get in yourself.
Yes. I will go too.
Hey, Foster. What do you want, Charles?
Do we have to go through with the thing?
Sure, unless the captain shows up with a change of heart in the next few minutes.
Well, if we have to do it, I want a favor.
What is it?
That little old fellow with the blue eyes. Will you let me take him back in the woods and shoot him myself?
What's the matter? Got a grudge against him?
You wouldn't understand. He would. I don't want him to see what we do to his comrade. I don't want him to get hurt.
It can't be done, Qualls. The captain said here, it's got to be.
But please, Foster, you...
Shut
you
up, get in line.
God, I can't do this. I can't do it.
Monday, if you stampede these prisoners, I'll blow your top off. Now get yourself together. Hey, you prisoners, get all the way back in there. Clear over. That's it. Now close in, keep together. All right now, fellas. When I give you the signal, let go quick. Spread your fire. Spray them from side to side. Ready now. Let them have it. Fire!
They won't go down!
How long are you going to take to kill them?
Pick up the rifle, Paul. What are you staring at?
Miss!
Right, side to side. Come on, there.
I'm Dick Mundy. I've always been considered a pretty hard-boiled guy, and I guess I was. I never saw men die just like that before, and it did something to me. I never thought it would take so long before they stopped kicking. I was in a tough spot. Bill Nugent was screaming on one side of me, and the other side was big old Everett Qualls. After the first burst of rifle fire, the gun dropped out of Qualls' hand. He stood there, staring, wild-eyed, at that little blue-eyed cabinet maker. He had shot that little guy right off, but he didn't go down. Everett Qualls seemed like he was ready to go berserk. Then the little guy looked straight at Everett, turned his head away, dropped on his face, tried to get up a few times, finally flattened out and was still. Corporal Foster marched us back toward our trench. We stopped in the woods to eat grub.
Pass that monkey meat along to Monday, Bill.
Here you are, Dick.
I don't want any.
What's the matter?
Nothing. Nothing at all.
Oh, come on, you guys. Snap out of it. You act like they were your own brothers.
They were. More so than you.
Hey!
There were men like us. Farmers. Painters. Bricklayers. Cabinet makers. And we slaughtered them.
Oh, God!
Oh, forget it, Dick. It wasn't your fault. Come on, get up off the ground, Dick. Have a swing of this.
Hey! What happened to Anabinet? Where'd he go?
He dropped behind a little way back.
Nugent, you go back and see what happened to him.
Okay, cop.
I retraced my steps back to the wood, looking for an avenue. I was thinking of the 22 prisoners in the trenches. Prisoners they were just a few minutes before. They were free now. What of the nine of us? I knew we'd never know freedom again. There were nine prisoners ourselves now. Men whose hearts and minds be forever locked in our own conscience. Things such as we have done can never be forgotten. The ghost of the 22 will walk with us forever. Before I realized where I was, I stood on the edge of the ravine. There they lay, where we had left them. Twisted into grotesque knots, like angleworms in a cave. Then I became aware of something moving among them. Looked more closely. There was Roger and Abbott going through their pockets. I shot at him.
Hey! An Abbott!
Oh, hello, Bill. What are you doing here?
Suppose you tell me what you're doing here.
Oh, just looking for some iron crosses, that's all.
Put that stuff back.
Now, Bill, don't be like that. They ain't no good to them squareheads anymore. We might as well have them. Split them with you.
What have you got in that other hand?
Huh? Oh, those are just some regimental rings and stuff. Nothing of any value.
Who are you, dirty louts, robbing the dead? Well, I'm going to leave you here for somebody else to rob your carcass.
Bill, for God's sake, don't. That's murder, don't you realize?
Murder, why, sure, it's murder. That's my trade in it. That's what they claim me for. Well, I'm going to do well by my teacher.
Bill! For God's sake, you! Murder!
My name is James Wade. I was the youngest in Corporal Foster's squad when we went into the ravine. But I was the oldest man in the world coming back. My father was a clergyman. And I was going to be a clergyman just like him. But I knew I could never preach to men about justice, love, and mercy. Those things had vanished from the earth. They were no more. If indeed they ever existed as more than words. Perhaps it wouldn't have shaken my faith so if Captain Matlock hadn't lined us up the next day and marched us all to chapel. I could never trust men again. I've been back to that ravine once since that day. The pits and scars have all gone from the land. Abandoned trenches and shell holes have now a solid mass of gently sloping vines that ripple all day in the wind. You can tell the places where the men died. The grass is more green. Poppies grow more red and cornflowers more blue. Perhaps that's because the soil is fertilized by the blood and bodies of those who fell. More likely it's because God is so sickened with the things men do to each other that he covers the places where they've been as quickly and completely as possible. They say that war makes beasts of men. But I say that beasts of men make war.
You have been listening to the Columbia Workshops production of Nine Prisoners, the celebrated American short story by William March, adapted for radio by Brian J. Byrne. Special music was composed by Bernard Herrmann, and the production was under the direction of Earl McGill. Next Monday night at this same time, the Columbia Workshop will present an original play for radio entitled Jury Trial by James and Elizabeth Hart. This is the Columbia Broadcasting System.